I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Brian Wood joins me again, the poet and literary agent, recently published a collection of poetry, his first, Winter Walk. When he was last on in the spring, we talked about it, and we'll talk about some more, as well as the craft of poetry that he practices, the sort of poetry that he writes, and why. We'll also talk about his work as an agent and some of his clients' books that you'll doubtless have seen at bookstores and online. BrianJWood.com is the website for more. Sakura Publishing is the publisher of the book. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Brian Wood. Mr. Wood, good morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you again, yeah. Winter Walk, which we talked about in the spring, and which you gave to me that morning. So I hadn't read the book, but I read the book now, so I have a sense of what it's about. But for people listening, just because we can't assume that they have listened to the first chat, what's in it?
Boy, that's a humdinger of a question. It's a collection of poems. It came out last year. A lot of them are about just stuff I've gone through as an agent and as a person. A lot of them are about, I grew up in a very religious household. Quite a few of them concern that. There are ones about a couple years ago. Some good friends of mine lost their son in a car accident. There's a poem about that. There's a couple of, you know, when you take the bus and they have those terrible poems and the poetry in transit, where the ads are normally, there's a poem about how bad those poems are.
Sorry,
I wish I could give you a better description,
no.
But it's kind of a grab bag of things that happened to me.
And it's stuff that's in your head, stuff that you experience. And putting it down on paper, or writing it, I don't know how you write. Do you write on paper? Do you write
on a computer?
On a computer. So when you commit poetry, I'm curious to know, because I've talked to poets for years now, but I'm always fascinated by what provokes them to commit the act of poetry. And for you, it seems like you're inspired by stuff that happens to you. But stuff that you see, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen often? Like, does it?
Sure. I'll give you a good recent example. I live in Coquitlam, mm-hmm. and we often go shopping at the Como Lake Mall. Right across from that mall is the First Church of China, Coquitlam. And their sign looks exactly like an ING sign.
Mm.
The first few times you go by, you assume it is an ING
it's
sign.
A bank.
Yes. And I couldn't shake that. So for a long time, my brain kept nagging and nagging and nagging and nagging. And then one afternoon, more accurately, I wrote a book called wrote a poem called The First Church of Coquitlam about that sign and how much it looks like a bank's. And most of the churches in our area don't call themselves churches anymore. They're Bible houses or fellowship centers or blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And they're really more coffee shops and daycare centers than they are religious places.
Yeah.
So from start to finish, that poem took about 2 days because my brain had been working on it and I couldn't help it.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not sure this is true of the other writers you have on. I can't help myself. The stuff comes out, and I either get it down and get it right, or I chuck it.
In this book, there are poems that you've written, say 5, 6, 7 years ago. And then there's a which you note at the bottom of the poem is the date that you wrote it. And then there's some poems in here that are also revised.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that process like? Do you come to understand whatever it is you wrote about so long ago and then add to it? Do you take something out? I mean,
yes and yes.
Really?
Last year, you follow the news, so you would have heard that Hitler's lackey died. His mm-hmm. name was Rokas Misch. And he was like the butler / gift guy / phone guy. And he was still, you know, up until last year, he was alive in Berlin signing autographs for people and going to the bunker site and introducing mm-hmm. himself. Very excited to be part of the Nazi.
Yeah.
And he was annoyed that people didn't know who he was. He was still signing fan mail at the very end. And I did a little poem about that called The Last Witness because he even wrote a book about his life. Because I can't quite shake the idea of a Stalin or a Hitler or a Mao having a receptionist gifts guy.
Yeah.
It's so hard to think of these murders as having a social side to them.
Yeah.
if, like, when Hitler, if he had a favorite opera singer,
yeah,
and that singer got engaged, it was this guy's job to make sure that guy got flowers. And I, to this day, I can't picture, you know, Hitler having a social secretary. Anyway, so the poem grew from that. It's called The Last Witness. It's it took quite a while to do, and I sent it to an old professor of mine, who suggested a number of changes, and I've incorporated many of them. So that's how the revision things work. The Rokas Mish poem was done around this time last year, and I have just gently tweaked a few of the stanzas here and there to reflect my professor's criticism of it.
Yeah. And so the way people react to your work, to whatever you write about, that's important to you.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's important enough that you would want to even change whatever was written.
If I think the suggestions will help the poem, I always incorporate them.
Yeah. Because, I mean, when I think of a novel, and novelists tell me this, is that they write it, they publish it, and then that's the end of it. They don't really think about it anymore. It becomes the audience's piece. But for the poet, I guess it's a more... you, as a poet, thrive with the interaction with the reader, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. So you write about Nixon.
Oh, yeah.
It'll matter what a Nixon file like myself might think about it.
Well, I knew the Nixon thing was a decent one because you immediately noticed there were errors in it on purpose.
Yeah.
Like, I think you said, Brian, you have this memo going out to Haldeman and Ehrlichman, but they were out of the inner circle by then.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I was hoping people would notice, is that Nixon in my poem is really talking to himself more than he is the nation.
Yeah. And so we've talked about what inspires a poem, and it can be people, it can be situations. Whatever you write about, it has to obviously move you in some way, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, and that could be good, bad, or indifferent, especially in the case of your friend's child.
Yes.
I mean, that's the depth of sorrow, losing a child, and so you... Do you understand a situation like that better? Because you've taken the time to reflect on it in poetry?
I'm not sure. In my case, I can't help it. I'm not sure if your other writers on the show have said the same thing. When there are things that happen out there, and my only real response to it is to be able to write about it. Sometimes if I can't handle it, I write about it. And that's exactly what it was like when my friends lost their son.
Yeah, like, I don't write, and I don't write poetry, and I don't write novels, obviously. But... it seems like a very cathartic experience for those writers.
I think it can be.
Yeah.
I think it can be.
Yeah, and so does poetry for you, whatever poetry that you might, other poetry that you might write, does it inspire, say, action off the page? I mean, if you're writing about someone that you like, say, which you do in the book, does that... people write poetry to say, you know, if they're interested in someone, they want to send that to them to show that they're affectionate, or show their affection, I should say. Do you do that?
Not that I'm married, no.
but before you got married, did you say send your wife Rachel poetry?
Rachel is the subject of many of those poems.
Yeah.
And yes, it was a pleasure to write those, and I hope she likes them. I hope she likes them.
Yeah, and I'm assuming she would. She's not in the room, but I mean, from what I've read of the poetry in Winter Walk, I think that would be, you know, pretty swell.
Well, I worked on them a long time.
Yeah. And so there must be something then that you can say in poetry that you couldn't say in a note, in a letter, in an op-ed in a newspaper.
I agree. I think we may have discussed this in the when you were nice enough to have me in the spring. Trying to think of something more boring than the story of Hamlet. If Hamlet was a 10-minute newspaper article, everybody would skip it and go to the sports section or somewhere else. Nothing goes on in Hamlet. It is just a brilliant poet at the peak of his career, talking about having his characters go through things that are tough to relate to, but man, the work in there is something else. And when a good poet is on his day, they can bring you into their world in a way that no one else can.
You write at the beginning of Winter Walk, in the introduction, about your reaction to poetry, because there's the classical poetry, which you've alluded to, of Shakespeare, which you think is the best, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. And then you see sort of contemporary poetry that sometimes... layperson, say, will look at and be totally confused about what it means or what it represents, what it says. And so you talk in the introduction about how you feel about, say, classical poetry and contemporary poetry. So for people listening to us, where do you fall?
Well, I think, if I'm not mistaken, you take the bus every once in a while.
I do,
and you've seen those poetry in transit things, and the poem is always terrible. It's always first-person singular. It never rhymes. Everything's in lowercase. It's always... the word dude usually shows up. It's just terrible. It's awful.
Really. I'm waiting for OMG and LOL to show up one day.
That'll be the next poem, because they forgot their smartphone. Dude. And it just seems to me an inferior form of a very difficult art. If somebody from Mars or a different galaxy came and found a book by Philip Larkin or Shakespeare or Yeats, they would notice some thought went into that. The stanzas are all the same amount of lines. There's a definite rhyme scheme, and they either are iambic pentameter or octaves. The verse comes out like that, and the rhyme goes like this. And by the end, whether you agree or disagree with the writer's picture, the point comes across. Whereas these poems on the buses, I don't know what the... they're talking about.
So do you worry about how it looks? Because, I mean, in reading the poem, it's one thing to read the poem, but then the way that it looks in terms of how many lines, even the shape of it, because of how the words fall in the paragraph.
The best readers are the ones who notice all of that stuff.
And so when you're writing this, you're cognizant of this. And
for sure.
Yeah.
I want people to be paying attention.
Yeah. So is it fun for you to write poetry? Because, I mean, sometimes like anything, work is work, right? And not all work can be, most work is rewarding, but not all of it's fun.
Well, somebody asked Garrison Keillor that once, and he said it can be, but it's not always fun.
Yeah.
And that's the best response. Sometimes the drafts you're working on go nowhere, and they get worse each time you have a whack at it. So whatever little bits of things you did like, you have to chuck, and sometimes you end up chucking the whole thing.
And so when you are critical of, say, contemporary poetry, because when I see those things on the bus, or I see, you know, because I've had some contemporary poets on the program, when I read their stuff, one assumes that everyone can be the poet. You don't think that, or do you?
No, I think it's a rare gift.
Yeah, and it's a what. I guess how do you know if you have the gift or not? Because, I mean, you could easily go up to someone who has one of those poems on the bus and say, "Hey, find something else to do." Right?
I wish you would. Well, it's like anything else. Quality has a way of finding its way through the world. I mean, anybody can make a film, but not everybody can make Annie Hall or Citizen Kane or Magnus and Emerson's. It's just the way the artistic world shakes down, and anybody can do anything. But the stuff that survives is the stuff of quality, and I would suggest to those poets on the bus that they might want to do something else, a lot of them.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, there are some very good contemporary poets out there, astonishingly talented, like Alice Major. But she, to me, is unfortunately an exception. Most of the poetry I read is extremely, even when it's well thought out and clever, it's always formless, and it strikes me as an inferior form.
So you, knowing you as I do a little bit, you obviously read a lot of poetry. You also watch a lot of TV, a lot of good TV, a lot of good movies. Is there anything that you've seen lately that I mean, there's a poem in the book about Amy Adams. That's someone who you've obviously seen on screen and who's inspired some thought.
Mm-hmm.
Enough thought that it would compose a poem.
I am a fan of hers, yes.
Yeah. would you tell us about the sort of things that fills your day in terms of what you do, what you see, and because I think that's a great key into who you are as well.
Did you happen to read Letter to Amy Adams?
I can't remember. Before.
Well, it's the one...
No, I did the Amy Adams. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, as you'll notice, it's based on Night at the Museum, too.
Uh-huh.
And in the poem, I wrote this several years ago, and in the poem, I predicted they'd make a crappy sequel, and they did.
Yeah.
It's coming out next month. So that was kind of neat to call that one, because I think I finished that one in 2011.
There was a line in it, too, about Robin Williams.
I wish in some ways I could take that out, because like everybody else, I miss him now.
Yeah.
But I thought his Theodore Roosevelt was pathetic.
Yeah. And then you
They managed to make Theodore Roosevelt boring. That's not easy to do.
No, he's not, yeah. Did you see that Roosevelt thing that Ken Burns did on PBS?
I enjoyed that very much.
Wasn't that great?
Yes.
You know, I didn't
He's so good at that, isn't he, of getting behind some of these people in ways you hadn't pictured before.
Yeah. I mean, and all you have is a picture, really.
Yeah.
And he adds so much to just...
And he gets such great actors and actresses, too. Like Meryl Streep as Eleanor Roosevelt. I could listen to that all day.
Yeah, and it was Paul Giamatti, wasn't it, who did TR?
Yes.
So it's a holiday season. The book is called Winter Walk, which came out a year ago. This time of year, what does it mean for you?
Boy, you've got some humdingers today. I don't know.
And they're not on my sheet either, which is a funny thing, you know.
I'm not a big winter fan, actually. Really? I much prefer the summer. that's a good one. I'm not an especially big winter or Christmas fan.
Really? Yeah. It's a fascinating time of year, because, I mean, we all rail against the consumerism of Christmas, and we rail about even the carols and the sort, and the, you know, and just the...
Well, I have a whole poem complaining about that.
Yeah, but it's something that we all get involved with, and we get wrapped up in it, and we get jacked up about Christmas, and we essentially become part of the scheme.
Yes. It seems to be something human in that we expect to give gifts no matter what.
Yeah. Great gifts, I should say, are the books of your clients. I went to a couple of bookstores recently, and I saw some of your clients' books there. The Ken Reed book, which is I haven't seen that, but I understand from what I've heard him on other things. It's about hockey cards.
That's right. It's already in its third printing.
Yeah. And I mean, he's an interesting guy, isn't he? Because he's about my age, and he's in his 30s?
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's 39.
Yeah. So that's selling well, obviously.
Very. The publisher is extremely pleased.
Yeah, you've got other books, too, that are out there.
Yeah, there's the Terry Ryan book, Tales of a First Round Nothing. Uh-huh. That's also, I think, in its third or fourth printing. And Bob McKenzie's Hockey Confidential is already at, I think, 6,000 sales and counting. That's doing very well. He's already sold like 4,000 at Costco alone.
Wow.
And then Mike Richards' book is doing well. Is 100 Things Everyone Else Is Wrong About. That came out from Penguin last month. That's also doing great.
That's a radio guy who wears the
that's right.
The glasses, right? Yeah. So a lot of your clients, I guess, are sports themed. Is that right?
That's what I specialize in, yes.
Yeah. And they sell well, obviously. I mean,
yep.
Not just this time of year.
They do. Yeah. They do.
People are interested, aren't they? You know, they are interested.
Well, you saw what happened when Pat Quinn and Jean Béliveau died. Mm-hmm. This country is wrapped up in hockey. We can't get enough. And I think when you lose someone like Béliveau or Quinn, I think Canada realizes, you know, the kind of class acts they were and how they carried themselves. And this country cannot get enough of hockey. So when a good one comes out, the people line up to get it.
Yeah, and but people like the chance to meet someone, say, at a Costco where they're citing a book, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You've always been a sports fan, even as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I loved it when I was a kid. Couldn't get enough.
What do you think sports and the appreciation, the love of that, what do you think that does for you as a writer? Because they've always said that the sports writers are the best, say, political columnists, because there's something about one that informs the other.
Yes.
And do you think that informed your poetry?
Oh, I think so. I have a couple poems in there. One's about Gordie Howe, and one's about going to a Giants game.
Yeah.
I think there is something poetic about sports when it's done well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to watch Michael Jordan when he was with the Bulls, you know, he basically won those six titles by himself almost. Not that he didn't have a good team around him who they could shoot and do rebounds and so on. But that Bulls team was really driven by him. It's like he could not lose, so they didn't. We've seen that a bit with Kobe Bryant and the Lakers. And when a gifted athlete is on his day, there is something poetic about watching their achievements, how they overcome all kinds of things to get where they are. You know, Wayne Gretzky is not 6 feet. He's slight of build even now. And yet he, 1 year, got 212 points. That wasn't even his best season. It's hard to even picture now what he achieved. And I think our regard for the great sports figures is like our regard for the great writers or poets. It's the same. It's people who can do remarkably difficult things very well.
Yeah, and sport, I mean, I'm not a sports fan. I don't watch any of it. But, I mean, I can appreciate or understand that it has everything that we experience in life, doesn't it? I mean, it has the tragedy and it has victory. If someone loses, someone wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think people appreciate that, too, that sports generally is not political. You know, you either go out and get the results or you don't. There's no speech about how you tried hard or, you know, you meant to do well. You either get it done or you don't.
And yeah.
That's a refreshing change from hearing a politician setting up another commission.
Yeah. Let's talk about sitcoms for just a sec, because you and I are both sitcom fans, and we share some of our favorites. I was looking at the recent spate of fall shows that came out, and I watched a little bit of Mulaney. I thought it was okay. But I haven't been, even shows that I regularly watch, like Modern Family, like The Mindy Project, I haven't been happy with what's happening. Is there something that you're a fan of that you, right now?
I wish. I'm still stuck on The Office. I notice you have all 9 seasons.
I mean, I
wish that show would come back, and I wish 30 Rock would come back. I miss them both dearly.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I got into the first couple seasons of 30 Rock, and then I sort of stopped because there's just so much to watch, you know, so much to do. So I have that on the back burner, I guess, and I can go back to that. So I've got, what, 5 seasons left or something like that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think you'll enjoy them.
Yeah.
It's remarkably well done.
Well, one show that I recently got, because someone on Twitter was talking about it, Gavin and Stacey, which is a British show. Hmm. Have you seen that?
I've only heard of it.
Yeah, so it's written by a guy named James Corden, who was in that movie with Keira Knightley, Begin Again, with Adam Levine. And he's in that Into the Woods, which comes out this Christmas. And he's the new host of the Late Late Show. He's taking over for Craig Ferguson. And he's a very funny guy. And so he's written this sitcom, this is about 7 years ago now, called Gavin and Stacey. And they've been trying to Americanize it. A couple of the networks have tried and haven't really gotten there. But it's a really great, funny show. And so
Check that out.
Yeah, I highly recommend it. The British series, I mean, you're into those as well, aren't you?
I can't say right now I'm watching any British show.
No.
As you know, though, I love Yes Minister and the original British Office. I thought were first rate.
Yeah. Movies, do you see anything good lately?
Oh, boy, the real humdinger stage, Joseph. you know, the last thing I saw was Lincoln at the theater.
Really?
Grand Budapest Hotel, which I really loved.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. That's the, they say that's a really
good
one.
It's fantastic. It's arguably his best.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of, I guess, Royal Tenenbaums and, you know, going back to that. And
I think you'll really enjoy it.
Yeah.
What did you think of Lincoln?
I thought Lincoln was, I don't like long movies to begin with. But I thought Lincoln was, even though it was quite lengthy, was good. I mean, it held me in my seat for the duration. It's one aspect of Lincoln and his life, and so it's a very small portion of who he is. And I don't, you know, I mean, I would like to see the whole life, if you will. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's such an enormous and remarkable life that you can't really do it in one.
No. Well, you would have read Team of Rivals.
Yeah.
And that was apparently the source material for the book, but it didn't seem to be touching much on her book at all.
No.
And I thought the ending was ridiculous, but I did enjoy the rest of the film.
Yeah. I mean, he's no slouch, Spielberg, when
no.
he makes films.
No.
I was hoping for the sort of the Team of Rivals part of it, but I guess he had to make it. And then what I found quite interesting was how he made, say, a vote in the Congress exciting.
Mm-hmm. Well, he showed the kind of deals that they had to make. I think that's probably the best part of the film, is to show, make fun of politicians all you want, but they have extremely difficult jobs, and the deals they have to cut are not pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they ever make a film about Johnson passing the Civil Rights Act, that film is going to be rated R. And it's not going to be easy to watch, because he sent a lot of people down the river to get that bill passed, but he got it done.
You watch House of Cards?
I have heard that's excellent. I haven't seen it
yet. Yeah, that's something worth seeing. The third season comes out in February. You may want to catch up.
I will.
I was talking to one of your wife's clients, actually, earlier today, who wrote a novel, Matt McMahon. The Blue Folio is the name of the book. And we were chatting near the end about how there are a great deal of, say, political shows out now, like House of Cards, West Wing, say, a decade ago. Mm-hmm. Newsroom is somewhat political. Madam Secretary, the new one from Tia Leone, I think Catherine Heigl has a sort of political drama. People are interested in politics. I mean, it's just not just junkies like you and me that are, you know.
No, it's fascinating when it's done well. It can't help but be.
You watch Homeland?
No.
That's the one that McMahon was talking about. I mean, that is rather political in its nature. I can't say that I've seen it. I have it on DVD, but I haven't watched it. But, I mean, yeah, it is interesting how people are interested. I mean, even Scandal, which is not, well, I guess it takes place in Washington. It's a soap, really, but people are interested in the depiction of politics. Even in Canada, mm-hmm. we had Terry Fallis's The Best Laid Plans, which apparently did quite well. It was a miniseries. I mean, people want to see.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, politicians can be interesting, can't they?
They're very interesting.
Yeah.
Just not always in the good way.
That's true.
But they, like you say, they make compelling material because of the choices they have to make.
Yeah, and it's about power. Yeah. You know, and people like power, I guess. Yeah.
Well, look at Lincoln's options.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were good ones.
Mm-hmm.
and I thought Spielberg did a nice job of showing what he was up against.
You mentioned LBJ, and it reminded me, because in Seattle, as we speak, I think it runs until the end of the month, they've been, the Seattle Repertory Theater, I think, has been producing the two plays, and I can't remember the guy's, I can't pronounce the guy's name, that's the two Lincoln plays. Which went to Broadway. The first one went to Broadway last year with the guy who plays Breaking Bad. What was the guy's name?
Bryan Cranston?
Yeah, Bryan Cranston. He played LBJ. It was called All the Way, and which was, I guess, the first year of his presidency. And so the second play is The Great Society, which is about coming up with the Civil Rights Act. And dealing with that. And so that's currently playing at the Repertory Theater. So even in the theater, politics is power is being depicted and quite well, obviously, because he won the Tony.
Look at the success of Nixon Frost.
Frost Nixon.
Thank you. I mean, that just exploded.
Yeah.
And that film is 2 hours of just people chatting.
Yeah.
Nothing happens in it. There's no car chases. There's no, you know, Scarlett Johansson doesn't take off her clothes.
Yeah.
It's just 2 hours of chit-chat.
Yeah. So what's next for you? I mean, you obviously have a lot of books on the go, do you?
With any luck, 8 of my books are coming out next year.
Wow.
From 8 different clients. It could be a big year for me. There's Ty Domi and Julie Bertuzzi.
Who's Julie Bertuzzi?
She's the wife of Todd Bertuzzi.
I see, okay.
Former Canuck.
So it's about the experience.
Called Crazy Hockey Mom.
Ah, there you go.
Life at the Rinks on the weekend. Yeah, and I've got books coming out from Colleen Jones at the CBC and Perry Lefko. Mark Spector, should be a good year.
Yeah, and the Domi book, I mean, we've heard a lot about that already.
Should be a big deal, especially in Toronto.
Yeah.
He's still worshipped there.
Yeah.
When I go to the ACC, I still see hundreds of people who were wearing his jersey, and he retired years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's a delight to see you again, and I appreciate you coming in to do this all the way from Coquitlam.
Thank you for having me.
And best of the season. Merry Christmas and all that to you and Rachel.
Likewise. Thanks again for having me.
The book is called Winter Walk, a collection of poems. It's from Sakura Publishing. Do pick it up. It's a great read in terms of what's in the mind of Mr. Wood, because there's a lot in there, and he does it quite well. And it'll give you something to think about. There's a lot in here, whether it's just about Amy Adams or the tragedy of life and death. BrianJWood.com is the website. For more Brian Wood, join me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.